Layer 745, FDR and the Origins of the Holocaust, 1939 to 1941. Between 1939 and 1941, Germany conquered immense areas in Eastern and Central Europe, bringing vast numbers of European Jews under Nazi control. This nearly eliminated their prospects for escape to safety. In 1941, persecution escalated to mass murder, beginning in Eastern Europe. What became known as the final solution of the Jewish question was a carefully planned and organized effort to destroy every Jew on the continent. In Soviet territory, beginning in summer 1941, they were shot by the tens of thousands. Reports of those killings were first heard in America soon after they began. Some historians maintain FDR could have done more to rescue Jewish refugees during these years. Others argue action to rescue Jews far behind enemy lines was impossible, and that in the end, the way to save lives was to end the war as quickly as possible. Below this text is an interactive screen entitled Confront the Issue, FDR and the Prelude to the Holocaust, 1939 to 1941. Text explains, whether Franklin Roosevelt should have or could have done more to rescue European Jews once the war had begun is a question that will likely be debated by historians for decades to come. Touch the screen to explore the historical debate and key documents from the Roosevelt Library collections. The following screens contain reproductions of selected documents from the FDR Library and excerpts of the historical debate that relate to FDR and the wartime refugee crisis during the period 1939 to 1941. FDR and the Origins of the Holocaust, 1939 to 1941, document captions. Document 1, title, Memos to the President about the Intergovernmental Committee on Refugees. Date, September 26, 1939. Caption, after war broke out in Europe on September 1, 1939, President Roosevelt continued to hope that something could be done internationally to assist approximately 200,000 to 300,000 refugees who had fled Germany but were now without homes. A meeting of the Intergovernmental Committee on Refugees was scheduled for October 1939 in Washington, D.C., and FDR planned to attend. But many of his advisors, including James G. McDonald, chairman of the President's Advisory Committee on Political Refugees, recommended that the meeting be canceled, as can be seen in this memo forwarded to Roosevelt by Presidential Secretary Edwin M. Watson. McDonald argued that the war would limit governments, including the United States, from contributing money for resettlement, that further participation by the U.S. would damage its position as a neutral nation, and that the meeting might be perceived by anti-Semitic forces as an attempt by Jewish circles to drag the United States into the conflict. Despite this advice, President Roosevelt held the meeting of the Intergovernmental Committee at the White House on October 17th. He urged the committee to help displaced refugees and consider post-war resettlement of an expected 10 to 20 million refugees in sparsely populated areas of the world. Citation, Official File 3186, Political Refugees, July to December 1939. Document 2, title, FDR's Memo to Eleanor Roosevelt, date May 4, 1940. Caption, in the early months of the war, Roosevelt continued to pursue various plans for massive resettlement of refugees, both during and after the war. One idea that was investigated was the creation of a special Alaska quota that would allow refugees to move into vacant lands in the Alaska Territory. Although the scheme had the support of Interior Secretary Harold Ickes and Labor Secretary Francis Perkins, the State Department opposed it as an end run around the immigration laws. To avoid the perception that he was favoring Jews over other refugees, FDR suggested that Jewish admission to Alaska be limited to 10% of the resettled population. The Alaska plan died in Congress in early 1940. Of more interest to FDR was the sweeping idea that remote territories in Latin America could be used for resettlement of displaced populations. He had been considering the plan for several years. In this memo to Eleanor Roosevelt, FDR explains his vision of a post-war resettlement of several million people in South America. Citation, President's Secretary's Files, Subject Files, Eleanor Roosevelt, 1936 to 1942, Box 159. Document 3, title, Memos for the President Regarding Refugee Children. Date, July 14, 15, 1940. Caption, during the spring and summer of 1940, calls for aid to refugees were overtaken by concerns over American security. Fears of fifth columnists led to the belief among some government officials that immigrants, particularly German-Jewish refugees, might be spies, intent on subverting the government and its neutrality. FDR felt he could not ignore these views of his FBI director, J. Edgar Hoover, his justice and State Departments, and his military intelligence chiefs. As a result, visa applicants were scrutinized even more closely, and the flow of immigrants slowed further. One area where there seemed to be some flexibility and popular support, though, was the rescue of children. In June 1940, Solicitor General Francis Biddle and White House advisor James H. Roe, Jr., sent FDR these memos urging him to support an amendment to a Red Cross relief appropriation bill that would provide $1 million to be used to rescue refugee children. Eleanor Roosevelt and WPA Administrator Harry Hopkins also favored the amendment, but with the 1940 presidential campaign underway, FDR would not publicly support the measure. On June 20th, refugee advocates organized the United States Committee for the Care of European Children and named Eleanor Roosevelt as honorary president. This and other private organizations continued to advocate for the admission of refugee children into the United States. Citation, Official File 3186, Political Refugees, from June 1938 to June 1940. Document 4, title, FDR's Exchange of Letters with Harold S. Vanderbilt, date, May 19th to 26, 1941. Caption, after winning re-election to a third term in November 1940, Franklin Roosevelt felt he could more freely take steps necessary to aid democracies threatened by Germany and move the United States toward greater preparedness for possible war. But isolationism was still a potent political force that limited FDR's ability to act, particularly with regard to American immigration policy. Roosevelt was frustrated by the short-sightedness of the most vocal isolationists, including Charles Lindbergh, who painted him as a warmonger bent on sending America's young men to die on battlefields in Europe. In May 1941, FDR received this letter from Harold S. Vanderbilt, known to friends and family as Mike, expressing the widely held belief that the war in Europe was futile and that aid to Britain would only weaken America's own defenses. FDR wrote a blistering response letter on May 25th, just 2 days before proclaiming a state of unlimited national emergency. Citation, President's Personal File 6666, Harold S. Vanderbilt. Document 5, title, Albert Einstein's Letter to Eleanor Roosevelt, date July 26, 1941. Caption, Eleanor Roosevelt's efforts to aid Europe's refugees continued into the war years. She was seen by many as a trusted advocate who could bring their views to President Roosevelt's attention. In July 1941, acclaimed physicist and German-Jewish immigrant Albert Einstein wrote this letter to Eleanor, urging her to tell the president about the State Department's rigid application of immigration rules and regulations. a wall of bureaucratic measures erected by the State Department, Einstein asserts, made it all but impossible to aid the victims of Nazi brutality. At the bottom of the letter in Eleanor Roosevelt's handwriting are two notes. One says simply, FDR, and is an instruction to her secretary to send Einstein's letter to the president. The second notation is Eleanor's reply to Einstein, which was later typed into a letter. Tell Mr. Einstein I will bring his letter at once to the president. Although Einstein's letter was given to FDR, there is no evidence that the president responded to him or took any action based upon it. Citation, President's Personal File, 7177, Albert Einstein. Document 6, title, Memo from the Secretary of State and Statement by the President. Date, October 24-25, 1941. Caption. In the fall of 1941, news of Nazi atrocities against Jews in occupied Europe filled America's newspapers. Reports filtered out of Jews dying in Polish ghettos, of executions of Jews in Germany, Poland, and Russia, and of mass deportations. These reports constituted a first glimpse of what was developing into a systematic campaign by the Nazis to rid Europe of its Jewish populations. On October 24th, Secretary of State Cordell Hull sent this memo to FDR proposing that he issue a statement in coordination with the British and other Allied governments denouncing the Nazi atrocities. Roosevelt's handwritten note at the bottom orders that the statement be released at 12 o'clock noon the next day, unless previously announced in London. The statement carefully avoids identifying victims as Jewish, but makes it clear that such actions against innocent civilians will one day bring fearful retribution. Citation, Official File 198, Germany, 1941 to 1943. Document 7, title, Eleanor Roosevelt's Draft My Day Column. Date, October 25th, 1941. Caption, although FDR felt politically constrained in the fall of 1941 from clearly identifying victims of Nazi brutality as Jewish, Eleanor Roosevelt felt no such limitations. In this draft of her My Day column, which appeared in newspapers on October 25th, she publicly grapples with the difficult subject of mass deportations of Jews from Germany to Poland and Russia, and tries to make the horrors in Europe more relatable to her readers. Admitting that the deportation experience was difficult for Americans to imagine, Eleanor writes, it would be a kind of leave-taking which could savor somewhat of death. In all partings with people whom we love, there is in a minor way that sense of temporary loss which presages the horrible finality of separation which comes over one at the time of death. Citation, Eleanor Roosevelt Papers, Speech and Article File, My Day Drafts, Box 1432. Book quotes final. Holocaust 2, 1939 to 1941. Richard Brightman and Alan Lichtman, FDR and the Jews, Belknap Press, 2013, pages 317 to 318. Without FDR's policies and leadership, there may have well been no Jewish communities left in Palestine, no Jewish state, no Israel. The outbreak of World War II led to the emergence of a third Roosevelt, preoccupied with aiding Germany's opponents and protecting the internal security of the United States. FDR believed that Europe's democracies could survive only with an infusion of American aid, which required the dispatch of arms and materiel abroad. With such momentous and difficult battles to fight, the president no longer spent political capital on Jewish refugees or sought to keep admitting streams of Jewish immigrants who, some feared, might harbor in their midst German spies and saboteurs. FDR salvaged a small number of refugees and planned for a massive post-war resettlement of displaced persons, preferably in sparsely settled places around the world, including Palestine. After his re-election in 1940, FDR also pushed through a reluctant Congress his Lend-Lease program for aiding the Allies, resisting Nazi and fascist aggression by all means short of war. Under Lend-Lease, FDR supplied British forces with the Sherman tanks that helped it prevail in the pivotal Battle of El Alamein. This victory kept the Nazis from taking Egypt and then overrunning Palestine and killing Jewish settlers there. Without FDR's policies and leadership, there may well have been no Jewish communities left in Palestine, no Jewish state, no Israel. David S. Wyman, The Abandonment of the Jews, America and the Holocaust, 1941 to 1945, Pantheon Books, 1984, pages 5, 6, and 15. Until the Nazis blocked the exits in the fall of 1941, the oppressed Jews of Europe might have fled to safety, but relatively few got out, mainly because the rest of the world would not take them in. The United States, which had lowered its barriers a little in early 1938, began raising them again in autumn 1939. 2 years later, immigration was even more tightly restricted than before 1938. In fact, starting in July 1941, America's gates were nearly shut. The best chance to save the European Jews had passed. In the years before Pearl Harbor, the United States had reacted to the European Jewish crisis with concern, but had refused to permit any sizable immigration of refugees. Although Congress and the Roosevelt administration had shaped this policy, it grew out of three important aspects of American society in the 1930s: unemployment, nativistic restrictionism, and anti-Semitism. These attitudes raised formidable barriers to the development of an American initiative to save European Jews. Yet the need was crucial. An entire people was being systematically eliminated by America's principal enemy. And pressures against extending help were not the only forces on the scene. Other important factors in American society created the potential for a positive response. America was a generous nation, a land of immigrants, led by a national administration known for its humanitarian sympathies. Most Americans embraced Christianity, a faith committed to helping the helpless. The country had an articulate and organized Jewish population that could play a vital role in arousing those positive forces. A truly concerned leadership in the government and in the Christian churches could have turned that potential into a powerful influence for effective action. Robert Dallek, Franklin D. Roosevelt and American Foreign Policy, 1932 to 1945, Oxford University Press, 1979, pages 444 through 446. In 1939, the problem had resolved around finding new homes for displaced persons, refugees from Nazi-dominated countries. In pressing the case for resettlement in other nations, Roosevelt labored under the handicap of American unwillingness to do the same. Roosevelt's basic solution was the development of a suitable area to which refugees would be admitted in almost unlimited numbers. Though the United States gave sanctuary to 90,000 immigrants in 1939, 6,000 more than all of Latin America, and twice the number accepted by Britain and her colonies, it was clear that Americans would resist opening their country to the kind of mass influx Roosevelt described in his plan. Indeed, in 1939 to 1941, when international conditions and American neutrality had not foreclosed the possibility of mass migration to the United States, Congress showed little interest in relaxing immigration restrictions. The United States, moreover, would not give entry to the full quota of Europeans allowed under the law. Convinced that the admission of immigrants gave foreign agents easy access to the country, the administration transferred the Immigration and Naturalization Service from the Labor Department to the Justice Department in 1940 and barred anyone even faintly under suspicion. As a result, the flow of European immigrants to America in 1939 to 1941 fell some 15,000 a year below what the quotas would allow. Roosevelt himself was not willing to press the case for greater immigration to the United States. At a time when he desperately needed congressional backing for a greater American role in foreign affairs, he refused to clash with the Congress by asking for a change in immigration laws. Also convinced that national security dictated a rigorous application of those laws, Roosevelt refused to challenge the State Department's narrow interpretation of who could come to the country. Doris Kearns Goodwin, No Ordinary Time, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, The Home Front in World War II, Simon & Schuster, 1994, pages 172 to 176. The battle to save lives by bringing large numbers of refugees into America was lost during the crucial months of 1940, when Germany was still willing to grant exit permits to the Jews. Eleanor Roosevelt became embroiled in a fiery argument with the State Department over its refugee rescue operation. In mid-September 1940, she learned from friends on the President's Advisory Committee on Political Refugees that the visa arrangements entered into with such high hopes in July had completely broken down. A deliberate policy of obstruction was underway, directed from the top of the State Department, from the man in charge of refugee matters, Breckinridge Long. Working with what one refugee scholar has called a singleness of purpose and a formidable arsenal of political weapons, Long had successfully devised a series of obstructive tactics that walled out any applicant the State Department wished to exclude. On September 28th, Eleanor penned an indignant note to her husband describing the unhappy situation. Eleanor's note stirred Franklin to contact Undersecretary of State Sumner Welles. "Please tell me about this," the president wrote. In reply, Welles suggested that the president first talk to Breckinridge Long. A meeting was set for noon, October 3rd. Long was well-armed, carrying fearsome stories purporting to prove that many of the refugees Eleanor and her friends wanted to bring into the country were not refugees at all, but German agents trying to use American hospitality for their own dark purposes. By playing on the president's fears that spies had infiltrated the refugee stream, Long managed to persuade Roosevelt that the State Department's cautious policy was the only way to go. So the battle to save lives by bringing large numbers of refugees into America was lost during the crucial months of 1940, when Germany was still willing to grant exit permits to the Jews. Eleanor's failure to force her husband to admit more refugees remained, her son Jimmy later said, her deepest regret at the end of her life. Martin Gilbert, Auschwitz and the Allies, Henry Holt and Company, 1981, pages 26 and 27. The beginnings of the final solution in March 1942 coincided with the moment at which the Allies were at their weakest. The murder of Jews during the first 2 years of the war had aroused much public sympathy in the West. The war was being fought, after all, against the evils of the Nazi system. But with the United States remaining neutral throughout those first 2 years, with France defeated and Britain alone, there was nothing that could be done to loosen the Nazi grip on Europe. Even after the German invasion of the Soviet Union in June 1941, Russia, far from being an effective ally, seemed more likely to succumb to the German attack. The United States did not enter the war until December 1941. She, too, in the early months of 1942, was in a weak position, losing vast territories to Japan in the Pacific, and having little immediate involvement in Europe beyond Hitler's own ill-timed declaration of war. At the same time, the British were facing the prospect of defeat in North Africa at the hands of Rommel's Afrika Korps. Thus it was that the beginning of the final solution in March 1942 coincided with the moment at which the Allies were at their weakest. In several ways, it was intended to do so. It was the Nazi aim to murder the Jews of Europe without provoking a world reaction, to do so secretly and silently, and to complete the task while Britain, Russia, and the United States could do nothing about it. You'll now be automatically redirected back to wherever you left off in the base message.